A brief commercial message before you see your video. Creating a so-called Palestinian state would be national suicide for Israel. First, there has never been a Palestinian people. The terms Palestine and Palestinian have no historic validity. Israel is surrounded by 22 hostile Arab Muslim countries with over 640 times the size of land than that of the tiny Jewish state. If the Jews surrender Judea and Samaria, Israel will be only 6 to 9 miles wide. If you agree that Israel must never retreat to such suicidal borders, then join the Jewish Task Force, JTF. You don't have to be Jewish to join. The link to join is below.
Shalom. Welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to refuah shlema, complete recovery for Sharon Katz, and for Chaya Bat Shani, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Rachel, Pesach Zev Ben Chava, Harav Mir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mittman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. On this week's program, we want to discuss this week's parasha, the Torah portion that we're going to be reading next Shabbat in Shul, in the synagogue, which is Parashat Noach. We want to discuss that, which includes Noah and the flood, and also includes the Tower of Babel. We want to discuss those two subjects as much as we can. And the third thing that we want to discuss on the program, we discussed last week, but we now have it officially confirmed that for the third time, Donald Trump is refusing to get out of the treaty of the agreement with Iran, an agreement which Trump himself said will lead to a nuclearized Iran, and what the implications are, how this is a disaster and how his policies are a disaster for America, for Israel, and for the world. First, let's speak about Noah and the flood. Noach v'hamabul, in Hebrew. Many civilizations have written about the great flood that took place. Many civilizations, from the Middle East to Africa, to China, to the Indians in North and South America, separated by oceans, by continents, by completely different languages and cultures, all of them write about a great flood that took place, a massive event that took place. So this is a common thread throughout many, many civilizations on all the continents, all over the world. So there was a great event like this. There was a great flood. There's no question that something like this took place. Did it literally kill and destroy every single living creature except for the people in the Ark of Noah? Or is that a symbolic story? I don't know the answer to all of these things. But I do know that there was a great flood. There was mass destruction and there was a great flood because numerous civilizations have written about this. There's documentation and overwhelming evidence from numerous civilizations. You know, it's amazing that the evil secular humanists who have taken over so-called science and so-called research, they see all of this proof that everybody's written about the flood. And then they say, oh, many civilizations write about the myth of a flood. How do you know it's a myth? If they wrote about it in China, if they wrote about it in Africa, if all the tribes in Africa write about it, if all the Indian tribes, the Aztecs and the Mayas and all the Indian tribes in North and South America write about it, if they write about it in Hawaii and in the middle of the Pacific, and they write about it and the European tribes that existed wrote about it, or there's some recording that proves that they felt that they had experienced this massive flood or that their ancestors experienced this massive flood. If you have this in India, by the way, also in India, if you have this incredible story that's being told all over the world by so many civilizations, why would you say it's a myth? Now, this is something which I don't believe was a myth. I believe that there was a great event like this. There was a great flood. Now, if it literally destroyed all human life in the world and only Noah and the people in his ark survived, there might be some symbolism in that story. There probably is some symbolism that he put all the different kinds of animals in his ark and that's what preserved the animals. I'm sure that there's a great deal of symbolism in all of that. But the fact that God decided to punish the world because the world was evil, that's a reality. That's a reality that that clearly did take place because so many people attest to it, so many different civilizations, so many different languages in so many different parts of the world. Now, all of these civilizations, from China to Africa to North and South America, all attribute this to the gods getting angry or the gods deciding to get revenge on human beings because of something they did that irritated the gods, because they don't attribute moral concerns to the gods. Their gods are not moral. Judaism is the first faith that says that these things are done for moral reasons. Judaism is the first faith that introduces into the world that God does things for moral reasons. If you're righteous, there's reward. If you're evil, there's punishment. There's reward and punishment. Judaism is the first religion that introduces the concept of righteousness and kindness and decency, and even the concept of whether or not we see it all in this world, that eventually, either in this world or the next, we're going to see justice. The quest for justice, the desire for morality, the desire for righteousness, these are concepts that Judaism introduced into the world. And of course, when I say Judaism, God, of course, is the one who gave this to the Jews through his prophets. We have a situation where there were 10 generations, the Bible tells us, from Adam and Eve. And last week we explained Adam and Eve being a symbolic story of the beginning of history, of meaningful history, 5,778 years ago. Adam and Eve, there are 10 generations from that generation, from that period of time, until the generation of Noah. And the world was so evil, even though there was meaning in the world, and even though God now had the ability, and people now had the ability to grasp God and grasp his laws and make intelligent free will decisions, they consistently were choosing evil. They consistently were choosing to do the wrong thing. They were consistently choosing to murder and rape and rob and take things that they had no right to take and live a monstrous life. This is what God saw in the world. He saw violence and he saw cruelty and he saw wickedness and he saw sadism and he saw ego. And so God decides to punish the world and cleanse the world through a flood. Now, Noah, it says, found grace in the eyes of the Lord. It says that God regretted creating the world. And of course, that's also symbolic. God doesn't regret things. It's all of this is all of the Bible is written in a way so that human beings can understand it. We can't possibly understand God. God is infinite. We're finite. God is limitless. We're limited. Something that's limited cannot comprehend something that's limitless. Something that's finite cannot comprehend something that's infinite. So the Bible has to be written, and the Torah has to be written in a way that human beings can comprehend it. So it says the hand of God. God doesn't have a hand. God has no human characteristics or no anything physical. Any attempt to create anything physical with God is limiting him. That's why God can never change. God is absolutely indivisible. There can only be one God, because only if there's one God can he be truly all-powerful. If there were two gods, then he's not all-powerful because there's another God that has power. There has to be, at the top of everything, there has to be one creator one creator. When you go, you see in the levels, even in this world, you see, this is on a higher level than that, and this creation is higher than that, and this form of life is higher than that. There's always something higher, 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 higher. Well, the highest has to be infinite. Has to be infinite. And for God to have infinite power, there can only be one God. He has to be indivisible. He has to be unchangeable. He can never be limited by a human body or by anything or by any form of limitation. He can never be changed. If there's any attempt to change God, that would mean that he's not perfect. God needs to be changed. God needs to be new and improved. And so we can't comprehend that, but those are concepts that are important for us to at least understand in general what our limitations are. Now, within the parameters of those limitations, there are a lot of things we are capable of understanding because God gave man a great deal of wisdom. Human beings are the only creatures with the capacity to understand that there has to be a creator, that there has to be something more than this, that we don't just eat and drink and sleep and die. There's more to life than this. There has to be more to life than this. Human beings are the only ones that can think of such things, and they can understand and comprehend and seek out a creator. None of the other creatures, as wonderful as they are, God created beautiful, wonderful animals and all types of beautiful, wonderful creatures, but they don't have the capacity to comprehend God or to understand or seek God. Only human beings have that capacity. Only human beings have true free will. And man has consistently chosen the evil way. And there are many reasons why man consistently chooses the evil way. The Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, has an advantage over the righteous inclination. Because when we're born, when a human being is first born, a baby only has the evil inclination. A baby only takes. What is the evil inclination? The evil inclination is taking. The good inclination, Yetzer HaTov, the good inclination is to give. The evil inclination is to take. When you're a baby, the baby only takes. Baby doesn't give. Baby doesn't understand what it is to give. And of course, baby is not guilty. That's the way it has to be. The baby has to do that to survive. That's the way it has to be when an infant first comes into the world. But this becomes ingrained in a person. This becomes embedded in the character of a person. That in the beginning, in the infant years, and then eventually in the childhood years, we become used to getting things given to us by our parents, by our teachers, by society. Things are given to us. Our food, our clothing, our toys, all the things that you get as a child. And you become used to having things given to you. So you assume, even when you become an adult, that, listen, people owe me. People have to give me. After all, I got everything given to me before, and I should continue to get everything given to me. It takes a great deal of maturity, and it takes a great deal of understanding, and it takes a great level of righteousness and wisdom to reach the level of understanding. Hey, wait a minute. When you're not a child, you have to move from being a taker to being a giver. Now, if you do take, you should take so that you will eventually be able to give. But because we start out life only taking, because we start out life out of necessity, only taking, the taking instinct, the selfish instinct in us, which is the evil inclination, that selfish instinct instead of the idealistic instinct, always has an advantage over us. So we have to fight that instinct. We don't fight it completely. Because if you didn't have the taking instinct, you wouldn't want to eat, and person would die. You have to have some of the taking instinct. You have to eat. You have to breathe. You have to procreate. You have to do the things that have to be done for the good of the world and for your own good. But a truly righteous person, a person that truly understands life and really masters what we're supposed to understand in life, understands that most of life should then be devoted to giving, to making this a better world, to caring about the people we love, our family, our people, our community, and making it a better world. That's the most important thing in life, and that gives true meaning to life. In any event, Noach in Hebrew and Noah in English, was righteous in that he believed God. He believed when God warned that this was going to happen, he believed him, and he built the ark, and he did what God told him to do. But he didn't go out running around warning other people. If someone came and asked him, why are you building the ark? He told them that there's going to be a flood. And of course, they ridiculed him and laughed at him. But he did not go out and try to change the world and make speeches and run around and try to influence people. He didn't do that. And that's something that the rabbis, Chazal, criticize him for. And that's why Noach, even after the flood and Noach comes out of the ark and his family comes out and they start once again to build a civilization, he was not the answer. He was not the tikkun, the correction. Because we're in this world to do tikkun, to correct. God deliberately gave us an imperfect world. If this was a perfect world, we'd have nothing to do in the world. We're in this world with imperfections because we're supposed to be correcting it. We're supposed to be making it a better world. That's why we're in the world. And Noach was not the tikkun to the evil inclination. In fact, when he came out, he was so depressed about the Holocaust that had taken place, about the flood and all the death and all the destruction. He was so depressed that he created a vineyard and started drinking and became and and began drinking and living the rest of his life drinking wine and basically getting drunk to try to forget the terrible experience he had and the terrible things he had seen. And so that was not the answer, because he fell into despair. He didn't try to correct people's behavior before the flood, because he felt it was hopeless. After the flood, he felt it was hopeless, so he turned to drinking and turned to despair and turned to an attempt to escape reality, because reality was so grim for him. So that was not the correction. That was not what Hashem was waiting for to correct the world. The correction would have to wait 10 more generations. It was 10 generations from Adam Harishon, from Adam, to Noach, and another 10 generations in the Bible from Noach to Avraham Avinu, to Abraham our father. Avraham Avinu was the correction. Avraham Avinu did not despair. Avraham Avinu always believed in God, no matter how hopeless it seemed. His name, Avraham HaIvri, one of the reasons for it is because the word Ivri, Hebrew, comes also from the word Ever. Ever means side, because it says Avraham stood on one side and the whole world stood on the other side. Everybody was idol worshipping. Everybody was against Avraham. Everybody thought he was crazy. And he stood on one side and never despaired and never stopped trying to teach people and trying to tell. And he convinced thousands of people. Trying to teach people and trying to convince people that there was only one God. He never despaired. And even when he faced 10 tremendous challenges, but he never despaired. He was ultimately the correction. And we see that toward the end of this parasha, toward the end of this Torah portion, that Avraham then comes into the world as the hope for the world. God is so merciful. God is so merciful that even though the world was wicked through 20 generations, people were wicked and evil and didn't want correction and just were cruel and vicious. But it was all worth it if just one Avraham came out of all of that 20 generations later, and he eventually would create and build the people, the Jewish people, that God intended to make a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests, a nation that would bring truth to the world, a nation that would bring idealism to the world and teach the world that giving doesn't make you a fool. That taking is the foolish thing, because we could take and take and take. When we're dead and buried, we're not going to take any of that with us. In fact, we're taught the only thing we do take with us are the good deeds and the mitzvot, the commandments we followed, and the good deeds. The good things we did are the things we take with us into the next world. The monetary possessions and the physical possessions and the other things that are so important to people in this world, we don't take any of that with us. Avraham, it says that one of the differences between Avraham and Noach, it says Noach was righteous in his generations. He was a tzaddik bedorotav, in his generations. What does that mean, that he was righteous in his generations? In other words, Noah, was righteous for his time. For his time, that was still considered very righteous. Just the mere fact that he listened to God. Just the mere fact that he wasn't going out and killing and raping and doing all the terrible things that everybody else was doing at that time. It made him righteous, for relatively speaking, for his generation. But it says in his generations. In other words, if he had lived in a generation of righteous people like Avraham, or generation where you had other people who were righteous, and there were other generations in history where there were righteous people, he may not have been considered so righteous, comparatively speaking. Avraham, on the other hand, was the epitome of righteousness, the ultimate example of righteousness. And that's why the Jewish people would be created from him. And that's why, no matter how low the Jewish people fall, thousands of years of persecution and hatred and assimilation and all the other terrible influences that have befallen the Jewish people, nevertheless, God promised Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, our fathers, that no matter what, there's going to be a Brit Olam, an eternal covenant with the Jewish people, and God will never forsake that eternal covenant with the Jewish people. And he will, it says that he will restore the Jewish people to become the light unto the nations and the great nation and a nation of priests and a holy nation. All of that will happen. That is coming. All of that is coming. By the way, you know, as I've always said, you know, if you don't see that the Jews are the proof of God's existence, and you're blind. I mean, just look at the world. Look how tiny the Jewish people is. In every generation, they automatically are the movers and shakers of the whole world. They're the ones that move and shake the whole world. Just look at the technology world today. Facebook, Google, YouTube, all controlled by Jews. Now, they happen to be evil Jews because it's an evil generation, but still, it proves the point. The Jews have that talent, that power that God has given them, that incredible power. If they use it for evil purposes, they're going to be punished. The ones who do that are going to be punished. No question about it. They're going to face severe punishment. But the Jews have that power to have so much power and influence in every generation, no matter what happens to them, coming out of this tiny people. This people that saw all the other empires of history come and go. And to this day, they're the movers and shakers of the world. I mean, not to realize that God did indeed choose them and that they are a special people and that there is a special destiny for the Jewish people. You got to be blind. That doesn't mean, of course, that the other nations of the world also have a very important role to play and very important destiny to play. But the Jews are there to show the other nations of the world that there is a God and that things are not what they seem to be if you don't look at God as the master of the universe. Now, the Tower of Babel, Migdal Bavel in Hebrew. After that terrible Mabul, the terrible flood, eventually a generation arises and they decide they want to build a Tower of Babel. And they all unite, all these peoples unite, and they want to build this giant tower. The Tower of Babel obviously represents totalitarianism. It represents the cruelty and evil of what man will do when his ego and his desire for power get the best of him, and when he turns other human beings into numbers and slaves. When they were building the Tower of Babel, it says that if one of the workers had fell to his death while they were building it, nobody blinked, nobody even cared. But if a brick fell, they would all be crying and mourning. Oh, a brick fell. How terrible. We got to replace that brick, because the tower and the bricks became more important for the tower. That project became more important than human lives, than the value of human life. People became just numbers, like in the Soviet Union or Nazi Germany or communist countries or socialist countries in general. Or the way you see it even in the United States, when you go to offices and bureaucracies, you're a number to the bureaucrats. They don't care about you. They're unfeeling and unconcerned. That is the Tower of Babel. It's evil. It's cruel. It has no compassion, has no heart. That's not the way of Hashem. That's not the way of God. The Jew is a rebel. The true Jew, the true Torah Jew, is a rebel against the Tower of Babel and a rebel against evil. That was what one of the reasons we had the rebellion in Egypt as slaves. Because in Egypt, everybody was a number. And the Jews rebelled against that. That's why the second book of the Bible is called, in Hebrew, is called Shmot, names. Because the Jews had their names. Their names were important to them. They were not numbers. They were names. And to God, every single person is important. Now, the Tower of Babel, of course, we have this in every generation, the New World Order, where people want to take over the world. Nimrod was the initiator of the Tower of Babel. He was the dictator in those days, and even today you have people wanting to take over the world. And we'll discuss on future programs how the prophecies may indicate that Russia will be leading a world coalition against Israel with Gog and Magog. That's something maybe in the future we'll discuss if you're interested in it. Because it says a nation in the north with tremendous economic problems will lead a coalition of nations against Israel to invade Israel. It seems to point to Russia in every way. And now Russia and Iran, two of the nations identified, by the way, in the Bible, in the prophecies. Paras is Iran today. That's identified. And the great nation to the north, the huge superpower to the north, which has tremendous economic problems, that seems to be Russia. Russia and Iran, those two nations which seem to clearly be identified in those prophecies, are on Israel's northern border, surely enough. It seems to be all coming together. God split up the nations of the world in the time of the Tower of Babel and created 70 nations and 70 languages. Because when people get together for evil, that's not good. That's not acceptable, and it's not good to God. And so he split up the nations of the world. When you have entities like the United Nations and the European Union and people who advocate a new world order in order to impose what they want on the entire world, and it's usually evil what they want to impose, that's not good for the world, and it goes against God's will. And in Gog, in the days of Gog and Magog, Gog will be the king and Magog will be the kingdom when they go against Israel, and all nations of the world will unite against Israel. That will be part of it. That's what they're going to get together for. They're going to unite against Israel. And God will destroy those who go against Israel. Those who try to destroy Israel will themselves be destroyed. I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. And so, I could go on and on, unfortunately, because of the limitations of time. I could discuss this for hours and hours, this parasha, the deep philosophical aspects of the parasha, the tremendous philosophical aspects of the parasha. It's everything in our Torah is relevant in every generation. It's always relevant. It always will be relevant. And it's something that we see, the same behavior we see today. We see the same human behavior today. It hasn't changed. The technology has changed. We're technologically more advanced, but human nature hasn't changed. And what God expects of us hasn't changed. And the moral laws of righteousness and truth and justice, those things haven't changed and they won't change. They're eternal truths. Anyway, that's our Torah discussion for this week. I hope people find it meaningful. I'm sorry that we can't go on even more, but there are time limitations, and because I could go on for hours about this. I love this, of course. I love discussing this. We also want to discuss that, just as we mentioned last week, that surely enough, as we predicted last week, Donald Trump is refusing to get out of the Iran nuclear agreement of Barack Hussein Obama. Now, he's claiming that he's not certifying them again, but he's not pulling out of the agreement. He says he's putting it back in the hands of the Congress. All of this is all a bluff. This is all baloney. They're still getting the benefits. This is not affecting them in a negative way. They're getting all the benefits. This is just rhetoric. This is rhetoric, and these are speeches. This is what Netanyahu does in Israel, too. Trump and Netanyahu, they make speeches. They speak from the right and they govern from the left. That's what Trump does. He talks about walls and then he pushes for amnesty for the DACA illegal aliens. He talks about the problem of illegal aliens coming into the country, and then he has less deportations than Obama, and the number of people crossing the border now for the past 6 months is up from the period of Obama. He talked about cutting the size of government. There was waste in government. The budgets that he has approved, one budget after another that he's approved so far, are bigger, with bigger growth, with bigger percentages of growth than you had under Obama. He's spending at a faster rate than Obama. He's getting us into debt at a faster rate than Obama. And everything that's supposed to be going in the right direction is not. This country will not survive on this trajectory. This is a path to self-destruction. But he's speaking. He makes speeches about how he's concerned about this and so on. And meanwhile, the policies he pushes are all lies. He said he was against transgenders in the military. But then he let Mattis, the defense secretary and the joint chiefs of staff, continue to allow transgenders in all levels of the military. Even though he issued an order, and then he said, but I'll let the generals decide if they want to implement it. Of course they, under pressure from the media, they decided they don't want to implement it. So the order is a worthless piece of paper. And this is true with everything he's done. All of it. All of it. Now he's going to take portions of Obamacare and remove portions by executive order, which will probably be overturned by the courts. And it'll cause discomfort and there'll be a backlash. And then there'll be an even greater call to get, not only for Obamacare, but to have even more socialized medicine. I mean, this is just, it's a disaster in every way. The news media was so unpopular when Trump before Trump became president. Now the media is popular again. Polls show the majority of Americans say they trust the media because compared to Trump, they think the media is truthful. I mean, he's making the left-wing media popular. The left-wing media is the enemy of the American people, and Trump is making enemies of the American people popular again. This is a disaster, and people don't want to see it. They put the blinders on. They don't want to see it. Don't make speeches. Don't give me speeches. We want results. We want action. We want things that reverse the decline and destruction of a country. That's what you want in an American president, and Trump is not doing that. And with Iran, the same thing. Same thing with Iran. They're still getting all the benefits. Nothing has changed. And Iran, they're building nuclear bombs. God forbid, but they're building them. And they're on Israel's northern border now. Iranian troops with Russian troops are in Iraq and Syria and Lebanon. Even Obama was objecting to that. Even Obama said he didn't want Russian and Iranian troops there. Trump is not against it. Trump will never dare say anything against Russia. Never. In that respect, he's worse than Obama. And for Israel, certainly. When are we going to wake up and realize? When are we going to wake up and realize that action speaks louder than words? You know, people are kneeling for the national anthem, and that becomes the big issue. He knows how to grab these emotional issues. And while he's grabbing these emotional issues, because everybody on the right is going to be against them, wow, they kneel for the national anthem. Of course everybody's going to be, is going to side with him on that. And while he's diverting everybody's attention with these side issues, these really minor side issues, and it is a minor side issue when the country's being overrun by illegal aliens. While he's diverting everybody's attention with these minor side issues, the whole country's going under. And people don't even realize it. They don't even understand. They don't even see that they're drowning in the quicksand. His tax reform plan, the middle class is going to pay more under his tax reform plan. It's a lie that they're going to pay less. The middle class are going to get a tax increase. Trump and his billionaire friends are going to get tax decreases. And yes, I am against the billionaires in the multinational corporations that don't give a damn, not about America, not about Israel, not about anybody but themselves, and about making profit, and they sell their mother to make profit. You better believe I'm against them. We need to wake people up. In Israel, we're doing the best we can. We're reaching people with our campaign. I think the politicians are seeing our advertising because I noticed that they use some of the terms we use, and there's a greater awareness of the issues that we're raising in our videos. So our advertising campaign is going forward in Israel. We're trying to reach as many people as possible. We're trying to make a difference to make this a better world. Join with us. Help us. We need your help financially, and we need you to help promote our videos, and we need you to become active, as active as possible, in promoting this movement, because we're trying to tell the truth to people. We're trying to teach the world that there's no reason for despair. Great things are going to come eventually, but we have to do everything we can in the meantime to make this a better world. We're obligated to speak out. We're obligated to be a voice of truth, even when there seemingly are no other voices of truth. That's an obligation that we have. That's our purpose in life. That's why we're put into this world. If you agree, the time has come to wake people up before it's too late. Join with us. If we work together as a team, we can still make this a better world, God willing. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.